Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 329. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me as always here on a beautiful Thursday afternoon here in Las Vegas. And I say beautiful Cole Coffee because it's merely like 108 today. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a nice, calm little Thursday afternoon.
Yes. Well, it's going to be a high of 8. Right now, it's only 97 degrees over here on my side of town, which is about 2 hours, I think, from where you're at, if I remember right.
I'm 15 minutes down the highway, Cole Coffee. I'm 15 minutes. You paint this picture. People think I live out in the desert somewhere. I'm 15 minutes from you. I'm maybe 20. I'll give you 20.
He's like somewhere right near the border of the state border and stuff. It's weird. It's so hard to get over there.
We're doing our little remote setup today, right? Kind of mm-hmm. having a little fun with the technology and basically testing that could do video at some point at some time, and maybe we're even talking about things that could do video from wherever we are, even if we're not in the same place. Because I guess should we just tell the world Cole Coffee is done with the road? Cole Coffee doesn't want to be on the road. Cole Coffee wants it to be at the palatial estates as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, you do this for 10 years, and at some point you don't want to travel every weekend. It just unless you're John Morgan. Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things that, you know, we got a lot of people on staff, you know, and if some want to go do events, let them go do some events. I don't mind it at all. Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to just be able to kind of not have to do everything both weeks. I think that's it. It's just burning out right now with the UFC every week here in town and then to hop on an airplane. I'm getting old, John. I just had my birthday. I'm getting old.
I think that's a big part of it, and I think maybe we'll see how things will change. Just so everybody knows, so UFC 265 in Houston, Texas, that will be me and Matt Wells. So actually, I'll be the camera guy. I'll be the Cold Coffee fill-in during the Houston fight week, and Matt Wells will handle reporting duty. But yeah, I don't know. We've been talking about it, and I get it. And I think honestly, we'll see how it plays out when we get to 2022 and things get back to normal. I think that's the thing is, I get it, man. You're on the grind every single week, and it's like it's not just getting on the road because, you know, every single week is a home game. There's been an event here, which is a blessing because we've been able to keep working, but it's definitely right. Been a multiple event week grind. As we've been joking, it's Groundhog Week, right? We're literally doing that's event it. Weeks every single week at the USC Apex. So I get that's it, man. It. You take a little
and it's
break.
A little tough. Yeah, and with the animals here at the house, you know, every time I leave, I have to ask a friend to come watch the house. And when you do that time and time again, you start to wear that favor pool thin really, really, really quick. So, yeah, I mean, if I don't have to ask somebody to come watch my house, you know, every other weekend, it should be good. And I think I could probably still keep doing it. It's just a little tough, you know, with the household being just me and the animals now. It's a little bit tougher to leave as much, so.
I get it, But the show must go on, though. The show must go on, though, and that's what we're saying.
The show must go on.
That's it. All right, listen, a couple shout-outs, by the way. First of all, shout-out to Matt Clark, presenting sponsor this week. Matt Clark, it was really a couple weeks back, was able to reach out to us and hook up the old Venmo account, John-Morgan-400, and sent us over some donations, and he clarified, yes. It's for award-winning PBR, and that's what we're doing, a little award-winning PBR. So thank you, Matt Clark. This episode brought to you by Matt Clark. Thank you for the frosty
Matt
beverages,
Clark.
Sir.
Matt Clark, yeah. I just got the realization, too. I forgot to do roadmap this week.
Yes, for the second consecutive week.
For the second consecutive week. See, shit's just last week doesn't count because last week was a fuck all on the road, or well, felt like we're on the road with the fight week stuff. That kind of burning out.
I will say, what a difference 1 week makes. By the way, first of all, I guess we never really got to discuss the fact that we got booted out of a bar for the first time ever in the long and distinguished history of the MMA Roadshow. I don't ever remember being booted out of it. We've been asked to come into a couple of bars. We've been given complimentary beverages and bottle service at times of people that are MMA fans. That's the first time we've ever been booted out mid-show. And I still don't know exactly what happened. It was kind of funny because it was all happening behind me, and Let's say I was a little toasty at that point, so I was probably a little oblivious to certain things going on around me. But you saw the whole thing
Yeah,
play
you
out.
weren't picking up on my body sign, my body language I was trying to give you.
Not one bit. There was no subtle body signs being detected by me. It was just us getting booted out. But quite the adventure. Was it? I don't care
and
for
you,
me personally. I was gonna say, was it embarrassing for you at all?
Well, no, I mean, but it was like, I thought you were good about it in the sense that you didn't want to immediately just be like, fuck these dudes, even though, you know, maybe under the breath we did say that. But I remember at the end of it, I was just like, dude, fuck these dudes. You know, like we've come, I mean, granted, it was a newer manager. I don't remember him from the last time. A lot of shit's changed since the last time that we went over there. But before, we've done that there. I mean, we've set up in that place. We've done stuff there. So it just kind of threw me off. But then you know, I had to take a step back and just be like, okay, you know, a lot of shit has changed since, you know, when we last did this, maybe like a couple years ago there, new managers, I know that they're still trying to open up, but still trying to play by whatever rules. But man, at the time of the night, I was just like, fuck this place. We're never going to tape here again.
Well, and listen,
but then like,
we had a pretty
hefty tab,
too. But then
the next day, we were
there
working again.
Well, yeah,
we did.
It's the only place to get a frosty beverages around there, so we ended up back there the next day. So you're right. We didn't hold a grudge. But, yeah, that was the other thing. We had a pretty hefty tab running, too. It's not as if we weren't, you know, consuming the product while we were there.
Yeah. Now I'm getting upset again, you fucking bitches. Yes, we had a great – I mean, it was a good little crew. It wasn't like we were talking loud or doing crazy. We weren't shooting any videos or anything like that. And that's what they mainly care about. Is people when they're trying to broadcast. I think the guy thought we were broadcasting live and then was thinking like, oh, MGM has told me don't let anybody tape without permission and don't do this, you know. But clearly earlier in the day, he allowed somebody to do it. It was just a matter of they just double-checked and said, hey, you know, we're going to be taping this little podcast thing. And they were actually going live to YouTube and he was cool with it. So the fact that we're sitting at a table, but maybe we didn't stroke his ego and ask for his permission beforehand, that he got a little ruffled or whatever, but I don't know. It just felt like after Julie Kedzie started that show, I felt like we were starting on such a fun high because she was just fire. She was so much
Julie
fun.
Julie was on fire. If you didn't hear last week's episode, go at least listen to Julie Kedzie. She was on absolute fire, and I definitely look forward to having her on again. She was absolutely on point.
And then that's it, you know, so I felt like we got a great start going, and then it just kind of like, oh, now we gotta stop. And it was just like, man, whatever. But yes, we had a pretty decent sized tab by the end of the night. And you know, what can you say? I'm trying to not hold that against your health because we are gonna be down there many more times, especially going forward in the future. But
it's funny,
wasn't a good look.
I will use this as an opportunity to apologize to Zachary Humphrey, who had hit us up on patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. He's one of our generous supporters over there. And he had a question, and we were going to get to it. Like, I had it on my show notes to get to, and then we got booted out, so I never even got to get to it. So, Zachary Humphrey, I apologize. He was kind of asking about leading into Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier, about how Conor's side was staying silent, but Dustin Poirier's side was really kind of just talking about everything and addressing everything. And Mike Brown was out there talking about everything and, you know, all these things. And you know, it was going to play in one way or the other. And, of course, we saw how it played out. And, listen, man, UFC 264 continues to dominate all the discussion this week, and I think rightfully so. I mean, the UFC and Bellator are both in action this week. Neither one of them are particularly phenomenal cards. We'll talk about both here in just a little bit. But, you know, I think everybody's still trying to pick apart this Conor McGregor loss, the Conor McGregor reaction, what comes next. And listen, man, we have been nothing but, I would say, praising of Conor McGregor's entire career and what he's done for the sport. And, you know, I'm constantly the first one to say, look, he is the biggest star in the history of MMA. But I got to say, this reaction to me has been very upsetting, man. I saw the Ronda Rousey tweet where she was like praising Conor for what he was doing by promoting the next fight while he was sitting there with a broken leg, and I couldn't disagree more with that, man. You know
I think Conor remember too. She was the kind of person as well that she had her own ups and downs with how she dealt with loss. So I think for her.
Good point.
She might have been thinking, hey, you know, he made a definitive push to move on and already think about the next. He didn't sit and you know, think about the loss too much. He's already moving on, but we all know that he did constantly think about it, and he still is constantly. But I think that's probably what, when I saw that too, I was like, you know, I'm surprised that she did it. But she had her own issues back and forth, and she dealt with some fights great, some fights maybe not so good. If we can remember and look back in the past where there were times she didn't show up to a presser. And people are like, dude, just deal with it, and people will get on with it. So that was probably her way of saying, wow, man, he was quickly able to make a decision on where his head was and what he was going to do.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that point. That's actually pretty interesting. Now that you put that in context, that is kind of interesting to see that that's the way she would contextualize it. Now, for me, I do think you got to give Connor at least a little bit of a pass in the terms that, you know, he did have a broken leg, and we know what kind of pain that has caused. I mean, Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva, you know, they have famously talked about how painful it was. Now, both of them, I think it was more severe. I don't know medically how it felt, but, you know, so I'm sure Connor was in some severe pain as he sat there.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
It's just the stuff that I don't like is the stuff about, you know, calling the wife a hoe while you're in there in the cage, and then these tweets that were sent out afterwards that were deleted, and like why are you even posting a photo of Dustin's kid, man? Like, I know you're not a father. I am. And, dude, that is, to me, that is off limits, man. You start talking about my kid.
It was off limits to me. You're right. Yeah. I don't have a kid, but I still had enough understanding to realize that, dude, you crossed a line that you should never have crossed, because, you know, that whole do unto others that you know, want done unto you. Does he want people posting pictures of his kids, post pictures of his baby mama? No, he doesn't. And it's like, dude, think for a moment. You know, he's in a total different headspace. I was so thrown off by his actions after the fact, and it just keeps getting worse. I just can't understand where his headspace is at for a guy that has achieved so much and has done some real good out there. He's working really hard to kind of take that away. Like,
yes,
the terms of the respect and the, you know, everything that he's earned. I mean, it's just crazy. And if he keeps going in a certain way, he literally could be taking away things from his own life. I mean, if he does something, he goes too far, and you get, you know, legal actions or police or other stuff, he's just borderline. He's borderline setting some shit up. And then what's crazy is that he has crazy fans out there. He has to be aware of the fact that if he put something out there in the universe, like we saw with our previous president, crazy motherfuckers out there are going to run with that. You need to be aware of the presence that you have in your followers. He has a cult-like following.
He does.
And all he has to say is say some stupid shit, and you're going to have one fucking loser take it to heart, and he's going to try to act out what his idol does. And he's got to be aware of that stuff.
Listen, that may sound far-fetched, but you're absolutely right. And you're right. It's the type of loyalists and followers that you have, it's crazy. I mean, can you imagine, like, what if somebody did something to Dustin's kid or whatever, and like published something on the internet and was like, I got him for you. You don't even have to worry, Connor. We handled it for you. Yep. I don't know. It's just, to me, the conflict.
And would he even be sad about it? I don't even know if he would at this point. The way he's acting.
God,
he's
I would
so
hope
clearly,
so.
He's just so clearly out of his head right now. I just wish he'd get off social media, think about it for a week or two, come back and be like, sorry, I was a little pissed off. I was in pain and I was pissed off. I said some ridiculous shit. I'm going to move on and be a better person. And then
that's it.
Cool.
That's it. Cool. That's all you have to say. We all make mistakes, but to continue to push that narrative, like I said, it was one thing that was said in the cage, but I was like, all right, let's give the guy a pass. And listen, I'm not the PC police, man. I'm okay with a little trash talk, and I'm okay with a little flavor to your fights. But again, I think family's off limit. I think race and religion is off limits, okay? But family, man, wife and kids, the conflict is between me and you. Me and you were selling a fight. Our families are not selling a fight. Yeah. They didn't sign up for this. So there's that aspect of it. And I think that's too far. And again, kids especially, man, it's just don't bring it up. So there's that aspect of it. Okay, but you were like you said, I was a little hot in the cage. I just lost. I was frustrated. I was in a lot of pain. But then to double down with the tweets and all that, and we know you're in a hospital at the time. It's not like you're at the bar. You know what I mean? You're in a hospital to get surgery, and you're tweeting this crazy stuff, man. It's
like
not good.
And
so
they escalated. It's like they escalated and got worse as he had more time to stew in that anger or something. It's like, you know, why are there not the people there to comfort him and calm him down? You know, like, perhaps don't do a fight week away from
Thank
your family.
You. Where are the people there around him? Where are the people around him to sort him out, man? I'm sorry if
that
you're part of his
or- to- that aren't afraid to piss him off and lose their job, lose their whatever sweet gig.
If you're a part of his organization and you feel insulted by that, I apologize. I'm not trying to specifically call out somebody, but there has to be somebody that is willing to get in his ear and pull his phone away from him and say, Connor, stop tweeting this stuff. It's not acceptable. Yeah. This is not good.
Like,
this is not helping
you. Friend? Like, who's his best friend? Doesn't he have a best friend that is like, bro, I'm not part of your payroll. Can we just have a moment and talk? Does he not have that dude? Does he not have a friend that could just be like, bro, you're acting like a jackass?
I don't know.
I mean, maybe that's G. Maybe that's if G was there, D could be like, bro. She probably doesn't say bro, but she might be like, hun, calm the fuck down. Like, what are you doing? You know? Nope. I mean, like, doesn't everybody have that, like, best friend somewhere that you know could come out of the woodworks when you're just hopefully losing your damn mind to, like, talk some sense to
you? You'd hope so.
You know?
If you're not willing, you're not a real friend. You're not a real friend, right? If you're not willing to do it.
Right. You're just either on the payroll or doing something.
So that aspect of it bothers me. The other aspect of it that bothers me is the video that came out today as we sit here. And Connor's scooting around on his little scooter there, what have you. And he talks about the existing injuries that were leading into it. And no, he doesn't want to make excuses, but I don't know. By the way, he said ask the UFC. I did see Simon Simano reach out to the UFC, and they're actually trying to get a statement on it because he says, I had stress fractures. Ask the UFC. They know. So we have reached out to the UFC to find out. But I'm not saying I don't believe it. I'm not trying to say I don't.
Shouldn't that come up in medicals and the commission?
Okay, see, that
would partially be on the commission then because they would have to clear it.
That's what I wanted. So the twofold. One, yes, A, it should have been on medical forums. And B, hold on. If you knew that the legs were the weakest part of your body and that there was potential issues there, why did your entire game plan revolve around you throwing
heavy
low
kicks?
Yes, heavy kicks.
Those were intense. I mean, they were doing huge damage. They were,
yes.
And because he was throwing them a million miles an hour, that was like full on. Like, I'm with you. If they were ever compromised, I'd be like, man, I got to try to play smart with that, you know, maybe not, you know, try to test fade or something.
Thank you.
And push that out there.
Thank you.
It just sounds a little suspect to me.
It's like, bro, I went in and I knew my right hand was broken, but we knew that was the shot we had to land, so we just threw the right hand as much as possible. Like, no, if you know your hand's broken going in, you're probably going to start using a lot of elbows on that side, or, you know, you're going to try to use something else. So I'm not saying that there wasn't some kind of pre-existing injury, but if it was that severe that there was concern, like, I just don't understand how your kicks would be such a huge part of your game plan. So, I don't know. The whole thing is weird to me. Here's what I want to say as the bright thing. You know me. I'm kind of an optimist at heart. I kind of always look for the good side of things. And some people say it's a character flaw because I try to be, you know, maybe sometimes I'm not hard enough on people because I'm always looking for the good in people. But that's just who John Morgan is as a person. So, here's the good thing I liked about the video was he did close it at the end of it by saying, you know, basically, this isn't over. I'm gonna be back. You can't beat the Irish. You can't hold the Mac man down, I think is what he said. I will say this. Maybe that's the positive thing out of here is now I feel like Conor McGregor has to feel like there's a problem. Like there's people doubting him. Like there's something, like it's him against the world. And maybe this'll be what kind of pulls it together for him, is him saying, you know, like, this is my purpose right now, is I have to get back to that guy that I was. I have to rebuild myself. I have to retool myself. And maybe, you know, this pause in his life forces him to address some of these things. Because, you know, that was the thing I was concerned about. Is right, hey, we're going to do this again. Man, if you jump in and do that again, are any lessons really learned? If what you're thinking is, well, I didn't even really lose there. It just my leg that we knew was a problem, it just gave out on me. And, you know, at that point, that's a – and I'm kind of busting his balls here, but that's kind of that Sean O'Malley thing, right, where it says he's still undefeated because, like, well, my body failed me against Chito Vera, but I didn't really lose, you know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what Connor is painting right now, and I think that's dangerous, man. I think at some point you got to step back and go, look, man, I'm not the same guy that I was a couple years ago. What's different? What's wrong? How can I fix it? And I'm hoping that this little pause will allow him to do that and force him to do that, because otherwise – I mean, Conor McGregor is good for the sport, man. The attention that he brings, the notoriety that he brings to things, it's good. It helps us all. But if he doesn't make some changes, man, I just don't see him beating anybody at the elite level at all. Not just Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, but it's crazy because everything you said is kind of like what they said going into this one. that he was focused. He was removing the distractions. He was doing everything that he needed to do to be back at the top. I'm coming back. You're going to see the old me. I'm like, so it's weird hearing you say, like, he just needs to come back and just take this time off to really refocus and come back and show people what there is. I'm like, wait, wasn't that what they just sold us on for this last one?
Like, bro, we already watched that movie. We already played that storyline.
We just watched that movie. Again, I would love him to come back. I mean, if it sounds like if those were sort of nagging injuries or whatever, the only thing that's going to maybe help those outside of the surgery, and even with the surgery that just took place, is time.
Right.
I mean, if he really needs to heal up his body and focus and come back, just give it some time, you know, and really come back and make a push. If he knew that that was an issue, he could get that fight anytime he wanted to. It wasn't like that fight was going to die away. He should have waited until he was fully ready, so that he could have give everything. But I still feel like that's just a little bit of a suspect sort of excuse as to how that performance sort of played out.
I do too, man. I do too, and I hate to say that because it sounds like, I don't want to sit here and be like, Conor McGregor is a damn liar. There was nothing wrong with his leg. No, maybe there was, but yeah. I don't know. He's making it sound like it was broken when he walked in there. Well, if it wasn't, that's it. If it was broken, why were you throwing kicks at the press conference?
Yeah. I mean, that's it. Fucking Dana's knee did it. Dana did it. Dana started the fracture when he accidentally took that kick from Conor. Oh, man. Dana should find himself. Find himself for his interactions. You know, and what you're saying is right. I mean, about Conor and what he brings for the sport. Everybody wants Conor to succeed. But at a point, it's hard to keep rooting for somebody that seems to go out of their way to give you something to feel embarrassed about rooting for him for. You know, like, you know, who wants to go and be like, who's your favorite fighter? Oh, it's this guy here. Oh, isn't that the guy that was like threatening somebody's life or, you know, calling a woman name? You know, insert whatever fighter name. It doesn't have to be Conor, you know. And it's going to be hard for you to, you know, at some point it's hard to justify.
That's my guy. That's my guy right there.
Respecting your idols. If you can't respect them as a person, I mean, it gets really hard to respect them just for being an athlete. And for the longest time, I think people respected him as an athlete and they respected his story. They respected how he pulled himself up, you know, from where he was. I mean, it's incredible. That's why he resonated with so many people. I just hope he doesn't burn all that good favor that he has with the general population. Because, you know, you're always going to have, like we said, the diehard fans that have changed every profile pic of whatever social media they have to Conor of some form. Those guys aren't going to change. They're going to stay their way. But, you know, for the growth of just the sport and just being able to say, like, hey, these people that I respect and I idolize and I want to tell somebody, hey, you should be like this guy. Make sure that that person is somebody that you really actually respect and that can live up to that. You know, a lot of the greats that people have said, even, you know, Kobe had his issues. Kobe's a great athlete. And I think he worked to fix himself by the end, but there's still a lot of people out there that say F Kobe, but that's tough. Cause most people are like, what did Kobe ever do wrong? You know, but you know, there's, you know, a lot of people out there, everybody's human. Everybody can make mistakes. It's just, you know, I just hope that he works to, you know, just fix the things that is hurting his overall legacy right now, because you can never take away what he did in the sport. His performances in the cage, you can never take that away.
Oh, his run to the two titles, it was unbelievable. Unreal. Just
he was a force of nature. Yep.
Oh my God, and just on the mic and in the cage, and I mean everything about him. It was amazing.
Everything he said was gold. It was like, please say one more phrase because I know it's going to be worth $1 million and people are going to want to click and it's going to be catchy.
You couldn't wait to hear what he was going to say next. And now I'm sorry if anybody's feeling this, but now I'm like, Conor, I don't want to hear from you anymore, man. Like, stop talking. Like, I want to hear less. Whereas before, I was hanging on every word the guy said. So, I don't know. We can sit here and talk about this forever because he is such a, you know, a polarizing figure and such a big star in the sport. But, look, he's going to be out for a year, and I'm hoping that he can address me because that to me, it was just too much, and it turned me on, man. And I'm not that guy. I'm not the pearl clutching like, oh, he was so offensive. But come on, man, leave. You know, when you're basically suggesting that is, you know, something's going to happen to Poirier's daughter, and you're insulting his wife, man. Stop that. So he's going to be out probably a year from everything we're hearing. I hope the comeback fight is the Diaz trilogy fight, if I'm being honest with you. I mean, I think a lot of it'll depend on what happens with Dustin Poirier. I mean, if Dustin Poirier beats Charles Oliveira and Dustin Poirier is the champ, and let's say, you know, you're talking about a year, so he may have had a title defense by then, maybe not. Let's say he's had the belt and he's had one title defense. I don't think you can give him Conor, man. You can't give Conor a title shot at that point, no matter what the rivalry is with Poirier, right? I mean, whether people want to see the fourth fight or not. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not all that overly intrigued by a fourth fight. I mean, I guess it would sell, but I don't feel like it's a fight I need to see. I think that I want the Diaz trilogy fight as the comeback fight. And I think it's a more winnable fight for Conor, if I'm being honest. I don't think he beats Dustin Poirier right now. I just don't.
I agree with you. You know, and it's funny because the unfortunate thing is at this point by then, you know, if Dustin is able to get the belt from Charles, which is a huge ask as well.
Yes, it is. Because Don't assume anything there.
That's it. Charles is a bad, bad man. And he's a bad matchup, I think, for Dustin more so than what Conor was for Dustin. I think Dustin knew what he was going to expect out of Conor. And the thing with Charles is his striking has really come across. So he's a twofold, really big problem. The crazy thing is that if Dustin does get the belt and then needs some time off and maybe does take a fight before that, can you see any way that Dana and them don't do an interim lightweight belt?
Oh no.
Between Nate and Conor. For the three put for that, and then also given the interim, then that forces Dustin to fight him again, and it would be a unification of the belts, and it gives a reason to let Conor come back for a belt.
Cold
Tell me
coffee.
You can't see that happen.
How are you speaking this into existence right now? This would not exist. This should not be a thing. This should not be anything that we're considering. But as you sit there and say it, I'm like, yeah, it's going to happen. That's totally
going to happen. It's totally going
to
happen.
I guess if you're really wanting to see the rematch, then what you need to be cheering for is Dustin to lose. And if you're cheering for Dustin to lose, you're just a terrible human being, if I'm being honest with you. But if the fourth fight means something to you, then I think you've got to be hoping that Charles Oliveira wins that fight, because then I think Dustin would be a little bit more open to entertain that fight. But I absolutely see the scenario you just painted playing out, where they create some interim title just so they can put Conor in it, man.
Bro, if they can do an interim fight on Francis after he's only had the belt for 3 months, everything is possible. Everything is possible.
It's
How
so
crazy
great.
Is that?
Oh man! All right. Well, listen. Speaking of everything,
I did
want to
say before.
Oh, go ahead.
Before I forget, when we were at the bar and so rudely got busted when we had that huge tab, I want to make sure we give another shout out to Nancy Kidder. She's the one that was there, and actually, she was there on the podcast, and her scene got interrupted. But I don't know if I'm gonna get in trouble by saying this. She covered her tab.
That was
she,
nice.
She
so
used
nice
the educational fund to help do it, because it was a big, you know, sort of gathering of journalist minds or whatever. And we were starting to gather, and it worked out. And she's like, "I got this," and I was like, "You're
super kind of her. Super kind of her to do it." We'll
we'll definitely have her on again.
Yeah, we'll have her on again. And I told her I would try to, you know, work with their program and that sort of thing. So if there's ever anything that I can do, I would volunteer my services for her. So you would definitely booted out of a bar. Freaking embarrassing, man. All right, listen. I had the beautiful transition all set up. Speaking of anything that's possible, it just came to my mind there. Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley are going to box later. You went out to L.A. for the week, even though you're trying to cut down on your travel, even though you're trying to spend a little more time at home. You did take the quick day trip out to L.A. for the press conference. And I don't know, man. I just wanted to kind of pick your brain on the overall scene there. I mean, listen, we've been open and honest about, you know, what it's like covering a boxing event. Anybody that's covered a boxing event and a UFC event or even a Bellator event for that matter. It seems like MMA events are a little bit more buttoned up in the way things are done. Boxing is a little bit more chaotic, and I don't know if that's by design or just how they end up doing it, but it ends up being a little more chaotic. So I'm assuming there was an ample amount of chaos, but what is this vibe you're getting? Because sometimes these Paul brothers, man, I know people hate hearing about them, but listen, this fight is going to happen, and it's got a former UFC champion, Tyron Woodley. I mean, this is relevant. This is a real fight, you know. What was your take in kind of being out there and just the whole scene itself?
And you're right, and especially like it, with this saying being like a real fight, and both guys I think really are taking it to heart that this is a fight, and you kind of heard them in their own words up there. You know, Tyron was like, "Don't let this guy fool you. He's up here trying to say, oh." He's Disney. He's this. He's like, he's got power. He's training. He's working with the right people. Like, this is a fight. I'm not taking him lightly, and I know he's not taking me lightly. He's like, so let's just stop this, all this talk of saying this ain't a fight. This is a real fight. I'm treating you as, you know, as the biggest challenge. Every fight ahead of me is the biggest challenge.
I like that attitude.
He's taking the same mindset that he did when he was in the MMA world. He's just transitioning over. And it was cool that there was this old school boxing journalist that kept saying, like, you know, so what are you going to do after this, Tyron? You know, you're going to blah, blah. He's like, I forget how he phrased it. He's like, oh, gee, I know you keep asking me the same question, like what I'm going to do if I'm going to take another boxing. I'm here. I'm going to box after this. This just happens to be my first professional boxing. He's like, I'm putting everything into it that I would put, that he put in all this training of, you know, when he was going and working to be a UFC champion. He's given it everything. So I'm really looking forward to that. And you know what was great about this one as opposed to other ones? And I'll give a shout out to our friend, Bellator person, Danny Brenner. Mm. His PR firm was the one that was kind of there help promoting it with Showtime. Right. So it went pretty smooth. So boxing ones in the past that have been totally just shit show. This one was pretty smooth. People lined up orderly. They let us in promptly, pretty close to what was supposed to be the start time. so it was pretty good. You know, normally those things can be kind of wishy-washy where the boxing promoter, nobody really wants to lead the reins. But this was a Showtime event being ran by a legit PR firm. So it went pretty good.
I like this kinder, gentler cold coffee. I feel like you've turned over a new leaf here, right? Like, it's not that they let us in late. It's that they let us in pretty close to the time we were supposed to get in. So thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, they made it easy. No, it was good. It was good. And as for, you know, the media that was there, I mean, I think was respectful enough that they weren't trying to make a sideshow of it. They weren't really prodding. You know, they weren't doing too many of the questions just to get Jake Paul to sort of dish out some line to play to his small but still decently sized entourage that was there watching. It always trips me out. Like, these guys can't do something without having 10 or 15 dudes in the audience, like, being paid chuckle audience or something. Like, oh, you said something funny. Oh, and it's like... Bro, you guys are like a bad cartoon, you know, like bad cartoon characters or whatever. But I thought Tyron held himself pretty well when they were talking back and forth. I don't think he wanted to be pushed around. He was quick to kind of just put it back in his face that, you know, you talked a lot of game, you do this, but this is a fight. This is a real fight. You like to say that you've been a fighter, but he's like... this is real. This,
yeah.
You know,
I think
we're
going
to be in there together, you know, and it's good. You know, I enjoyed it though.
Yeah, I think he's right. I mean, I think this one to me, even though it's still kind of a circus, it feels a lot less of a circus than the Askren fight did, than Triller did, you know, than everything that was around that. This is a fight. And I don't know. I'm interested. I'm definitely going to be watching. I want to get your take on this too, because I will say this, and I get the ridiculousness of the Paul brothers, but as I've said, they're starting to grow on me a little bit, and Logan growing on me because I loved Logan's attitude around the Mayweather thing, where he was just like, "Look, man, don't let people tell you can't do something. You know, look where I am. My second fight, I'm in the ring with Floyd Mayweather.
Isn't it
whoever
great
thought
when
this
people
was
are
possible?
Humble? Isn't it great when people are humble and then you want to root for them? You know,
does that, does that connect it? Does that connect anything else we've talked about today? I don't know why you're bringing it up there. No, I agree. You know, so Logan grew on me that because when, yes, he was out there being a showman and being a salesman and all that, but at the end of the day, he was like, look at this, you know, and he had like this kind of inspirational message, right?
Yep.
So here's where Jake is growing. It was cool. So here's where Jake's growing on me is that, you know, he keeps bringing up this message of fighter pay and that sort of thing. And I get it. You know, part of it is probably to stick it to Dana White a little bit, but I love what he said, and he's speaking the right language. And I think this was so key to focus in on. Jake said, the fighters are the content. And I thought that was such an interesting way to put it because he is looking at the fights as content. I mean, that's what he is, right? That's what they both are. They're content creators, right? They made themselves famous through social media. But they're 100% right. The fights and the fighters are content. And we've talked to people behind the scenes that you know, I mean, hell, we've mentioned it on here before if you're a longtime listener. I mean, the UFC is less of a fight company than you might imagine. It's a content company. It's a media company. It is in the business of creating content to sell and to license out to platforms all over the world who are willing to pay them for them. It just so happens that that content revolves around fights. So when he said, yep, the fighters are the content, I was like, this guy, it's just a small little tweak in approach, but it's he's saying the right things and he's saying the right language, and he's 100% right. Now, the problem is not many people have been successful in, you know, okay, well, we'll just do this on our own. Well, the thing is, you know, the UFC has access to, you know, multi-million dollar marketing platforms and, you know, yeah, established distribution platforms and all. So it's like it's hard for you to go out there and do it on your own. And that's really what this whole lawsuit is about, you know, about the antitrust lawsuit and all that, is that the UFC is saying, hey, we're not a monopoly. Anybody can do what we do. You know, you heard Dana come out and say, hey, just go start your own company. Well, you can't really do that. But I don't know. It's just Jake, I love the way Jake phrased it, and it's just a small little thing of the way it's presented, but he's so right. You know what I mean? The fighters are the content. There is no,
yep,
there is no content for the UFC to sell if the fights, yep, if the fighters aren't fighting. And it's just kind of interesting to see this guy continue to push. And by the way, putting his money where his mouth is, not just talking trash, but the whole Sarah Alpar situation and doing the donation there. I don't know, man. These crazy Paul brothers, they're starting to grow on me a little bit.
What'd you think about, I don't know if you happen to catch it, because I don't remember us really talking about it in the chat, our Slack chat, our work Slack chat, about the tattoo bet.
I don't know
if you heard the tattoo bet. They have the loser has to get the I love, you know, Tyron Woodley or I love Jake Paul tattooed on their bodies. If they hold their word, which they shook on it, so that's a man's, bet.
That's
now
you
shook
man's
on
bet.
It. So, the loser has to get the other one's I love, you know, said name on
that
their body somewhere.
That is hilarious. I love it, dude. That to me, that's like, it's crazy. And that is, it's trash talk in a way. I mean, you know what I mean? Like that, I don't know.
Yep.
I love it. I thought it was great. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was great. I'm telling you, these cats are growing on me. I know there's probably gonna be people that'll be like, John Morgan, you're the MMA hardcore, you're the MMA purist, you're the guy that's been around from the beginning. What are you talking about? But hey, yeah, man, I just gotta be honest, right? If they're doing stuff that's appealing to me. Now, am I saying these are world class athletes or that, hey man, these guys are gonna be the next world shit? No, I'm not saying that at all. But I like what they're doing. I'm just saying, I like what they're doing.
And you got to give it to them. And they're doing the work. I mean, they're hiring, they're spending their money hiring and bringing in some of the best training partners that you could possibly have. They're doing the work. And honestly, the feel, and you know, going back to how this press event felt as opposed to, say, like the Triller event, this is Showtime that's got behind it. Showtime, the home of boxing. The people that are like, okay, we deal with boxing, and if Showtime's like, one, of course they're going to get their name behind it because they want to make some money, but Showtime brings a whole another level of professionalism, whole another level of respect. They're doing the right thing. So, I mean, good on these Paul brothers, man. I mean, they're doing the work to put themselves in a position. They got good sized frames. I mean, they have athletic builds. I didn't even realize, old boy, was from Cleveland. You know, now I got to give him a little bit of Buckeye love.
that changed everything.
You know, I'm like, fuck this Tyron guy, man. He's fighting a Buckeye. No, I'm not going to do that stupid shit. But, they're doing the right things, but I mean, there was a definite feel that was different with it being under now like the Showtime banner as opposed to what it was Triller. No offense to Triller. I mean, they're just stepping new into the game and they're trying to do their thing.
And they want to be different. They want to be that. Triller wants to be the crazy outlier, right? So that's not an insult to say that.
Yeah. I think it's going to feel like a typical sort of Showtime boxing event, and like the co-main event. I mean, you got legit title holders going at it. So it's going to be interesting, man. But yeah, I mean, I can't fault what the Paul brothers are doing. And I thought afterwards, even when he was talking about the fighter pay, he's not trying to take the mantle and be like, follow me, fighters. But just as a person, like you said, that knows what his worth is and what he brings and what he being content himself and everything he's doing. All he's trying to say is like, you know, hey, look at what I'm doing. You guys could do the same sort of thing. Yep. He's not trying to be like, you know, I'm going to start an association and you guys should follow me. But he's like, hey, guys, you know, if what I'm doing works, you could do the same thing. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Good
man.
On him.
Crazy. I've done a 180 on these guys, man. I think I thought they were clowns. And now I actually kind of enjoy seeing what they do. It's and like you said, they're putting in the work, man. It's not like James Toney coming over to MMA where he clearly did not train anything in MMA. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are putting in the work. So good on them. I know we'll be tuning into that. This weekend, though, we'll be tuning into UFC on ESPN 26, as you said. Me and you covering another event at the UFC Apex. We did Media Day earlier this week. Islam Makhachev and Thiago Moises in the main event. I actually had a chance to speak with Islam in a one-on-one interview earlier in the week as well. In Islam, first of all, Islam, I got to give him credit, man. He's trying to learn English. He's trying to have a little, speaking of the trash talk, he's trying to have a little bit of trash talk in there, which I love. You know, I asked him if he wants to fight Rafael Dos Anjos, and he's like, yeah, but, you know, and it's the broken English, but it's great. He's like, yes, but he run for me, but he old, he needs to retire. I can help him retire. I was like, I love it, man. Good job there. Yep. You know, and he's doing that. And listen, this is a guy that, you know, a lot of people around him have tabbed as a future UFC champion. Of course, Khabib Nurmagomedov, his longtime training partner, and now helping coach him a little bit too, has always said, look, this is the guy. This is the guy. Islam was kind of funny. I was asking him, you know, how much he's taking from Khabib now that Khabib doesn't have to worry about his own fighting career. Now he's just in a coaching role. And he told me, he's like, well, it's good. You know, he can spend more time teaching me. He's like, the bad thing is, he's like, I can't spar with him anymore because he's too big now. he's put on some pounds in his non-fighting days, so I can't spar with him. But listen, you know, he's trying to learn English. He's trying to do all the right things. And this could be a big moment for him, you know, a main event. And I think if he wins this fight, it's going to get him, you know, one of those kind of top five opponents, the ones that he's been struggling to get. And I get it. He's one of those guys that people legitimately do not want to fight. And I always point it out because I hate when people say, oh, they're scared. You know, that fighter's scared. Yeah. Look, there is nobody on the UFC roster that is scared of anybody. Okay, just get that out. If that is in your vocabulary, get it out. They ain't scared. Now, is it a wise career decision when you realize, you know, A, this guy is going to grapple the hell out of you. He's going to be a wrestling heavy attack. He's going to make it a very, very hard fight, which means it's going to be a hard fight to even prepare for, because you just got to do that dirty, grimy wrestling every single day to get ready. If he beats you, you know, obviously he doesn't have a lot of name recognition, even though us hardcores know who he is. I mean, how many people outside the hardcore sphere have any idea who this guy is? And I mean, they're gonna be seeing his name for the first time when they tune into this thing this weekend. So there's no name value. If you beat him, everybody goes, yeah, who'd you beat? And if you lose, or you may win and just look terrible because you have to grind out this, you know, difficult fight. So Islam is a guy that nobody has really wanted to fight, and that is legit. Not because they're scared, just because it hasn't been good reason to. There will be good reason to after this, because if he wins, which I tend to think he will, he'll be right up there at the top of the division. Now, all that said, I do not want to take away from Thiago Moises. Thiago Moises is got good jiu-jitsu, so it's not like he's completely out of his element on the ground. He's got better striking, so if he can keep it on the feet, you would certainly favor him to do things. So I'm not completely counting him out of this fight. I just will say I do think Islam is one of those guys whose wrestling is so good that he's just an incredibly difficult matchup for anybody in the division.
I completely agree. I mean, they make it look so easy. On paper, it sounds so easy. It's like, just keep it standing. Just keep it standing, and you have a really good chance. It's really hard to keep it standing with these guys. And you got to think that Khabib he's not going to be blowing smoke up anybody's ass trying to say like this guy is a future champion unless he really thinks it. I've never seen him do that to anybody else before. So if he's confident and he's putting the work and he believes that this guy is going to be a future champ, he's going to be a future champ. And everything we've seen leading up to this point, I mean, proves that it's probably going to happen sooner rather than later. I think probably hands down, unfortunately, our staff pick is probably pretty heavy in one direction on this one. And it's no slight to Thiago, like you said. It's just every once in a while, fighters go up against these guys that are sort of might as well be immovable forces where you just can't get around it. And it's not through anything that you can do. It's just you happen to hit a force of nature that is too big to overcome right now. And I think that's where Makhachev is at right now in his fighting. Mm-hmm. There's always a chance. I mean, it feels shitty to say, oh, there's a puncher's chance. There always is that puncher's chance, but I've never seen anybody be able to kind of have their way striking with him without somehow giving up, going to the ground. And I think that's just going to happen. And I envision it could happen first or second round, I think.
It's going to be interesting. That would be a huge statement if he could get that done. So, listen, favorite Islam Makhachev here. No disrespect to Thiago Moises, but, you know, maybe this will be the coming out party for Islam Makhachev. You know, it is the main event. It did get elevated to the main event when we lost our headliner. Went from 3 rounds to 5. Both guys signed up for it, said no big deal. Let's go ahead and do 5 rounds. They both want to prove they belong at that next level, then can compete in that next level. Don't think this is going to be one of those cards that does a huge number. And, you know, I think this is one of those ones, if you want to catch the replay and so it's on demand, you can skip through all the commercials and that sort of thing, feel free to do that. Or you could just read about it all at MMA Junkie. We'd be happy to keep you updated there. Just go there. But I will say, I think the biggest story probably is the return of Miesha Tate, right? I mean, no disrespect to those two guys in the headliner. Yeah. But that's probably the biggest story on the card. There's the turn of Miesha Tate facing Marion Renault, who, by the way, Marion was hilarious. You know, when she's made it clear this is her retirement fight, and I was like, man, are you sure you might not sway a little bit? You know, maybe you have a great performance. You go, maybe one more. And she was like, absolutely not. I am done. I have had plenty. Meanwhile, Miesha Tate is saying Miesha Tate 2.0. So, I guess we could set it up, but I'll just play the audio now because I think everybody knows the story. Former champ, took more than 4 years away, has had children in the meantime, had a big change in her personal life behind the scenes as well. That's obviously been well documented, and she's back and she's ready and she looks good and she looks to be in phenomenal shape, man. And her
incredible shape,
unbelievable shape, and her attitude, man. She's focused. She's there. She seems excited. So we'll play you a little bit of my questions to Miesha Tate at the media day. So here is my conversation with Miesha Tate. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. Minute.
Almost 5 years. So talk about it. I mean, obviously you've been building to this point. You made the decision. You've been training, but now you're here. Fight week. What's the emotion like for you right now?
It feels damn good to say it's fight week. Yeah, I mean it's like that old friend that you haven't talked to in years and you call him up and you're like, you haven't skipped a beat, you know? That's how I feel. I feel at home with this. It's very natural. And I'm the happiest to be here that I've been in a very long time.
When you made the decision to walk away, it seemed to me like mental burnout more than anything. Is that an accurate way to say it? Like, it wasn't that you didn't feel you couldn't compete. You were just kind of tired of dealing with everything?
Yeah, absolutely. I just had too much on my plate, and especially like baggage that I just really didn't need. I needed to clear away things that were taken away from me as a person, as a human being, right? We're all humans, and I think we've all been through rough patches in our life, right? So that was just a really rough time for me, and I just needed to step away and regroup. And I kind of identified that as with the sport. But to be honest, when I've taken this 4 years away and I look at it, and I'm more in love with the sport than I've ever been. So it wasn't that. It was just the entanglement of everything. And that included the sport. And when I had to step away from the toxicity, that meant I had to step away from the sport too, because I just didn't know how to detangle the knot, you know, until I was outside of it.
As far as coming back is, I wonder if this is like the ideal scenario, right? Like, this is kind of a small fight week card after a huge event. You know what I mean? Like, you were in the spotlight in the heat of it, like for a long, long time. Is this kind of refreshing that it's not all of that?
It's so perfect. It is so perfect. I'm so glad I wasn't on the Connor card. I just didn't. I've loved that I've just been able to focus on what I'm doing and just get my feet wet again, right? I mean, it's been a while. I feel great and I'm rolling with the momentum, but I don't feel like I need all that right now. I'm just doing my thing. Like, I could have gone to the Connor fight too and just been a guest or spectator, but I'm like, I just want to focus. I just want to do my thing. And that's what I'm going to kind of been the theme of this camp, just very ultra focused.
What do you think about the matchup with Marion? What do you think she brings to the table? What do you think about her as an opponent?
Like, I think Marion is great. I really admire her. I think she's very solid. I don't think she has a lot of holes in her game. She's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. She has that strong submission over Sarah McMahon. So impressive. She has a great submission over Jessica Andrade. And she stays in fights. You know, the fights she has lost have always been very close. She's lost a number of split decisions. She's been on the verge of being a contender a number of times, and she just didn't get her break. But the way that I look at this fight and the Marion Renault that I prepared for is a mother who's going to have her son in the corner for the first time, who's going to look at somebody that matters between rounds and say, I don't want to let that person down. You know what I mean? I could only imagine as a mother, if I physically saw my children between the rounds, like, it's going to charge her and she's going to come and she's going to bring it. This is the fight, you know, according to her, that she's always wanted. She's always wanted to fight me, and there's nothing left. It's her retirement fight. So what does she have to save for? There's no title fight on the horizon. There's nothing else. So I think for her, she's going to bring everything that she has. So I've really had that mindset the entire camp, that there is no underestimating this woman. A lot of people might, because they might look at her record and say, oh, it's not the best. You know, she's never been finished in the UFC. How about that?
Yeah.
Who else can say? I mean, not very many women, not even the champion Amanda can say that. I can't say that. Holly can't say that. You know what I mean? A lot of the very best women in this, you know, Juliana fighting for world title, she can't say that. But Marion can. You know, and she's fought a lot of the best. She's never been finished. So she's a tough old, you know, I don't want to say a tough old dog. I don't want to, you know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, she's a veteran. And she knows how to stay in these fights. So I'm expecting her to bring it.
I know that you said that, you know, coming back, you're not wanting anything less than gold, right? You're coming back for it all. But what's the journey for you here, right? Because this would be, like you said, she's a tough, durable competitor, but not necessarily the highest ranked. You walked away at the top of the division. How do you go? I mean, do you start from the bottom and work up, or do you think what you accomplished 5 years ago means that, you know, you're two or three in the world or one win away from a title shot? How do you see your journey to the top?
I don't know how it translates. You know what I want to do? I just want to start with Saturday. You know what I mean? I think it's very important that I get that win and I don't look too far ahead. You know, I am somebody who, right, has short-term, mid-term, long-term goals. So there's a way that I would like for it to go in a perfect world. But I know that I need to accomplish this. It's imperative that I get this win for my trajectory. And, you know, I think it's not unrealistic to say that if I have the performances that I'm planning on having, that it could be, you know, as little as three fights until I'm back into a title shot. You know, if I'm beating and I'm continuing to move up and I'm climbing the ranks, you know, that I think is a fair assumption, but I just want to start with Saturday and, you know, see how that goes.
Nice. Last thing for me, like you said, I mean, you pick up a win or two, that spotlight's going to get super intense once again. All right. Do you welcome that? I mean, do you feel like, I don't want it to be like it was the time before? Cause like I said, I know that the pressure and the intensity on you was a lot.
Yeah, you know, it was a lot, but I still don't think that it was the pressure or the intensity that was the problem. I just think it was me and where I was at, you know, that I just couldn't handle more of anything. So, you know, when you're in a place of depression, when you're in a dark place, when you're suffering, but you're putting on this front and face, and I'm trying to convince myself a lot of the time, you know, that I'm okay. You know, I just didn't have it to give anymore. That's really what it boiled down to. I just didn't have it to give anymore. And I was so used to that, because since I was 19 years old and I started fighting, that's the way it had always been. It had always been that way in my personal life, and it had always been that way through my entire career. And I always felt like, you know what, that's how it is. You know, I thought maybe kind of was how it was for everyone, I guess. And I just did, and I showed up, and I, you know, cry here and go do this, and, you know, have my emotional despair here and go do and perform in spite of. But I'm at a place now where I feel like I don't need any of that. what if I just got rid of it all and I just allowed myself to be the very best version? That's where I'm at. So I feel very charged and very excited to move forward this Saturday and pursue this second part of my career. So it is upgraded. It's upgrade time. Tate 2.0.
All right, so there was Misha Tate. Listen, I mean, she's always been professional and always been, you know, a great interview and I think honest and straightforward and all that. But I don't know, man. Like I said, physically, she looks amazing. She's posted the pictures on her social media. You know, she says, I heard her talking to Dana White actually a couple weeks back. They were, I can't remember why Dana came over to our side of the Apex, but they ended up talking like right in front of us. And I didn't really post the details of it because it was a private conversation that I just couldn't help but overhearing because they were standing in front of me. But she was talking about the fact that she has like the lowest body fat percentage she's ever had. You know, she was talking about like personal records and personal gains and certain things. So, I mean, physically, she seems amazing. From a mental perspective, which so much of this game is mental, man, at the end of her career, she just seemed absolutely burned out, if I could be honest with you, man. And I get it, man. The rivalry with Ronda Rousey obviously was massive, and the strains on her, you know, man, it's just the demands of her. I mean, she was stretched thin, let's be honest. And I think she felt at that time that she didn't have the support system that she needed around her anyway. So she just seemed so completely burned out. And that seems like a totally different person. And, you know, we touched on it there. I feel like this way of returning, where it's not on the chaos of a Conor McGregor card, where it's not even on the chaos of a normal fight night card, because like we barely have any media. I mean, there were five of us in there asking questions the other day.
Yeah.
She won't have a crazy crowd. You know, it just seems like kind of a nice re-entry into the organization instead of, you know, just coming back and being, I don't know, hounded right from the start or in a high pressure situation. I think she's setting herself up for success here. Now, we'll see once she gets in there what she still has. I don't think she's necessarily, you know, that the game has passed her by or anything like that. She's been training. She's stayed in the gym. She's been a part of MMA the whole time. It's not like she unplugged completely. So, you know, the test will be once the cage door closes. But I'm kind of optimistic about what she'll be able to accomplish in a return, if I'm being honest with you. Now, I'm not saying I'll pick her against Amanda Nunes right now, but I wouldn't pick anybody against Amanda Nunes right now. So that's no slight at Misha Tate. I'm kind of excited to see what she can accomplish in a return here.
Yeah, I mean, look at these pictures. And I hadn't really even went to her Instagram, but I just did. But my Lord, is she jacked.
I think
I'm going to switch my picks, because part of me was like, Renaud wants to go out there and give her all. And, it could be one of those storybook endings. You know, ends by beating a former champ, you know, and yeah. I loved how Misha was very, very respectful of her. But man, this is the former title holder. I mean, this is the person that gave Ronda a lot of tough challenges and her heart, everything that she showed out there. If she's coming in focused and she's actually re-energized, she's going to be dangerous. She left on her own terms. She left while she was still at the top of her game physically. Just mental, you know, we've heard over and over and over what the mental side can do to a fighter to help them perform better, or perhaps be the trick as to why they didn't win, because their head held them back in some areas. So if she's coming in firing at all cylinders and she's focused, she got that mom strength going on now.
That's right.
Which I bet is even stronger than dad strength.
Has to be.
It's going to be something, but man, I've always liked Marion as well, and this is hands down the fight of the night pretty easily. It's going to be interesting, but yeah, it's clearly, as you said before, you know, this is definitely outside of Makhachev, you know, possibly having his breakout moment. The return of Cupcake to the UFC is awesome, because I mean, the UFC needs more female stars that it can rally around. I think it does a kind of a half-assed job of promoting the ones that they have right now. I think they could always do a little bit better on that, but they could be doing that on the men's side as well. I think they just, you know, they pick their certain few and then kind of run with them. They could always do better, but Misha gives them another opportunity of a name that they can push out there. So she has a really good showing, and she is really back. That's good. It's good for the sport. It really, really is.
I agree. I'm excited to see how she performs in there, and I think that's, you know, I think that's what a lot of people are going to be tuned in for. I will say, by the way, I'll set up another one as well. Mateus Gamrot versus Jeremy Stephens. Gamrot with that impressive career record he amassed over there, fighting in KSW, and now has finally got his first UFC win under his belt as well. He didn't fare so well in his debut for the UFC. But now he's got his first UFC win and now wants to build on that. And he is stoked to be going against Jeremy Stephens, who, you know, Mateus even said, like, this is a big opportunity for me. This is a big name. I had to take it. This is amazing. But I wanted to set up the audio of Jeremy Stephens as well, because I trimmed it down a little bit, but I left my questions in there as well as Cold Coffee's questions. Cold Coffee, obviously, intrepid reporter that he is, I thought I got a fantastic answer out of Jeremy Stephens. But I spend a lot of my time talking about, you know, the face-off and what that's going to be like. So we'll know a little bit about – we might have already seen it by the time you listen to this, depending on what time you're listening to this episode of The Roadshow. But I'm intrigued by how – both Stephens and Gamrot are going to follow up on a face-off after Stephens' last fight was called off because of that big shove. This will be the first time he does one. So I was intrigued by that. But then, I don't want to spoil it for you, but we got to see a different side of Jeremy Stephens, courtesy of Cold Coffee. Here he is, little heathen.
Jeremy, can you describe just kind of where your headspace is at right now, man? I mean, I think about last time you were here and, you know, very emotional week and all that, and then it all falls apart. So where do you stand right now?
Shit, I'm jamming, bro. Straight jamming right now. I'm ready to rock and roll. It's fight week. I don't have to cut a million pounds to go and fight. I'm excited, man. It's good to be back here and hear your voice and just be here in presence of fighting.
That's awesome, man, to hear the positivity. I can't imagine you were that way right away, right? I mean, I know you want to get out there and fight. So, I mean, how difficult was that to not, you know, get that opportunity?
What do you do, man? What do you do? You know, you do a lot of work, you know, I was closing out a lot of tabs, you know, last time we had talked, and just in a really good head place and space, and the opportunity didn't come. And I realized, you know, everything happens for a reason. Take the positive out of it, just like I go about my life. And, you know, here we are facing, I feel like, a more game opponent, a little bit more dangerous of opponent, guy can mix it up a lot better than Jafar. So I'm excited.
Nice. Any regrets? I mean, I know you're going to be you. You're the little heathen for a reason. But, I mean, any regrets in that shove?
You know, my you saw my interview and you heard his interview. He kind of sounded a little bit arrogant, you know, not really giving me credit, kind of saying this, saying that. And he was dealing with injuries. And then when that happened, it was like, oh, I get it, you know. But the human side of me was like, you know, that maybe if could have waited. But, you know, the primal side was like, nah, fuck that, bro. You broke protocol. First of all, we were in UFC a couple of days before that, pounding, you know, to him and his girlfriend, whatever, and everything was cool. But I could tell at the weigh-ins, and he just kept coming up, and he was just like in his eyes, and you know, he gets right in my face and touches nose to nose, and to me, it was just like disrespect, bro. I'm showing up for a different reason. I was really showing up to really concuss him on Saturday night. I mean, call it brutal, what it is, but you watch my highlight tape, you know what I'm here to do, and. To me, it was just disrespectful. And, you know, like we could have had a good fight, and I was cool. You know, I was telling you earlier that we were cool. We were hanging out before, and you know, even he was late to the weigh-ins. He came in like he was going to hit a set, you know? So I just think that he was just in a different headspace than I was. And, it's probably a good thing that we didn't fight, because I had bad intentions.
You know, they have like the Jeremy Stephens policy now, right? Like before every card, they're telling people, by the way, if you touch anybody, you can be taken off this card.
Yeah, that doesn't work, man. I've seen so many people touch people. This is the fight game, bro. This isn't a sport. You know, you want to keep it sport, you know, watch something else. You know, Connor kicked Dana, you know, and you know, did he get any trouble or any fines taken out? Hell no. Boy's making him millions and millions of dollars. So it's the fight game. People love that shit, to be honest.
Yeah, they actually do. All right, let's talk about this one. As you said, kind of a more game opponent. I mean, an impressive record, but obviously a lot of it built outside of the UFC. So were you familiar with this guy at all when they presented him to you?
No, I had to look him up.
What do you think and what you've seen?
MMA wrestler, striker, you know, grappler at heart. You know, there's another guy. I feel like he's going to want to be taking me down. Game plan, trains with a great camp and American Top Team. So they game plan really well. But he's going to find out in there. It's hard to game plan against a dude who's throwing bricks and shotguns at your chest and body, and able to defend takedowns as well. You know, Frankie Edgar took me down a couple times, but it didn't hold me down very long. I was able to get up, you know, and Frankie held down Charles Oliveira and whooped his ass. So Dennis Bermudez, guy who come in with wrestling. You know, he took me down right in the beginning of the first round. I'd received a cut, little things. But then after that, all his takedown attempts were failed. Then he ended up getting smashed with a knee to his dome, and that's how we treat them guys right there. So I'm looking to go out there and have a great, great performance game, Gamrot. I feel like he's a worthy opponent. He's game, but he's in for a long night.
Yeah. What do you do if he gets in your face at the weigh-ins, at the ceremony, at the face-off? What do you do?
You know what? I don't think we're just going to allow that. You know, I think we're just going to keep a distance. I might just stick my hand out to shake his hand. I want to be completely calm, chill, collected. And Saturday night, because you know, I didn't walk away with my show money like some people did, you know. So I'm gonna be playing it cool, man.
Nice. Last thing for me,
or maybe not. Who knows? Maybe when we get there, we'll see. We'll see.
Shove him anyway.
Yeah, who gives a fuck? Who gives a fuck, right? I mean, unless you give a fuck, like the Diaz, like the fans love you. So who knows, man? Catch me in the mood. We'll see.
Maybe that'll be your thing. Like just when people walk up, you just automatically shove them.
Shoving Stevens, baby. When I shove people, they don't fucking move. You hear that, dude? I mean, honestly, after the fight, after that kind of down, like I saw that and like I really wanted to retweet it, but I didn't. But it was just fucking hilarious, dude. So
last thing for me, just talk about, I guess, the importance of this fight. Because, you know, you talk about, man, like the great headspace you were in and kind of this, you know, reinvention of yourself. Then you didn't get to. So, I mean, is this a big night for you to go out there and show that the work you put in is paying off?
Every night is a big night, man. Your ass is on the chopping block every time you get in the UFC, even if you're on a win streak. You don't give a fuck, man. You got to go out there and do your thing. But I don't ever put that pressure on. I can just fight. I can scrap. I just have it naturally. You know, I know that, you know. But I know that I want to win. I don't want to fucking lose. I don't want to be one of them guys just come in like, oh, I had a great performance. No, I want to put people away. I want to win. You know, like I've been telling people, the money is for my family, for my future, for them to play softball, for them to do their thing. I just want the fucking win, just to stand over your body after I concussed you and you're laying there and just almost like, oh, that's the win, bro. That's what I chase. It's a fucking, the adrenaline. It's been a long damn time, bro. And it's been a long, over a year since I fought, you know, since I was 16 years old. You know, and all I have is from my fist, literally, like since I was 16 years old. You see all these clothes on me besides the Venom. You know, I've earned it with my fist and fighting. And that's what I really love to do. That's what I'm passionate about. That's what I bring to the table. And that's why people tune in to watch me fight.
What does life after fighting look like for Jeremy Stevens?
Chill, bro. No more weight cutting. Just chilling on real estate, collecting money, watching my kids grow up, maybe being a softball coach, softball dad. I really just want to enjoy the journey and let my money work for me and just live life, you know. And I definitely want to be 70 years old, still, you know, picking up the lady, shaking her down like dice at night and running marathons and just enjoying it and just kicking back. You know, I got a brand name, Screaming Heathen. I'm looking to make my own beer, have my own marijuana brand and just live life, brother.
You would be the most intense softball coach ever. Do you ever do anything like, you know, it's funny.
You haven't met my wife.
I love your passion. I mean, do you ever try to do anything like super chill, like fishing, or are you the most intense fisherman in all of history?
No, I love the fish. I'm from the Midwest, man. I love to hunt. I love the fish. I do super still stuff, you know. I like to smoke weed and meditate and do hot yoga. I do them things. I'm a lot different person outside the octagon. I wish maybe you guys would follow me around. You'd be like, really, this guy does that, you know? Or you probably, you know, I drink coffee. You know, people just think I brush my teeth with bad intentions, like Dana said all the time. I walk around, but I'm not an angry person, bro. I really like to stand in my power. I really like to help people. I love to give back. I'm the type of guy who take off my shirt. I've donated to homeless. I've put myself in charities. I've given back. I take my kids to programs in the shelters. We go down there for Christmas. We donate stuff like that because, you know, I can't sit back in my big ass house and pool and be like, hey, you don't, this is the way, this is the way. And I'm like, you know, cause they don't know how their dad grew up. They don't see that. They just see this soft, loving guy who's their hero. So, I take them to experiences like that. These are still people and this is how you treat people. And just because like, hey, I was in a shelter, one time with my mom and look where I made it. So you don't treat people any different. So that's the type of guy that I am outside the octagon. And I love that, you know, something like Dustin Poirier, you know, someone who is in that type of stage, making that type of money, really helping out a lot of people. That's what I love to do, man. I love to donate my time and help out the people who really, truly need it.
That's awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so there's Jeremy Stevens, obviously the, you know, the lovable hothead that we all expect him to be, but there's a softer side, Cole Coffee. He likes to hang around and, you know, smoke a little weed and do a little hot yoga, that sort of thing. He's just a kind little guy. He doesn't brush his teeth with bad intentions.
He totally does. It's so funny when he was saying that, and it's funny because I think if you listen closely, after he first said about how he wanted to be a softball coach, I couldn't help it, but I chuckled, and I was thinking about it. I sort of laughed a little, and I was smiling. I was like, I hope he didn't think I was like really laughing at him. I was like laughing at the idea of like, no fucking way. Like, if I saw him as a softball coach, he would literally be the most intense. But it's funny if you go back
in my head. Yeah, in my head, what I'm picturing is like him yelling at an umpire, like, "That's not a ball! I'm gonna kill you!"
God, yes. He's going to have the most record for being ejected from games, and if not, I would be sorely upset and disappointed. When he is on and he is engaged, and he has been the last couple times, he is so fun for an interview. He's completely at ease. I love that you could tell that he was enjoying being there. He was enjoying talking. I mean, we all know that. I mean, fight weeks in right now, especially with the Apex, they're staying at a residence inn or whatever. But it's not like it's a fancy place, but they're stuck with their own devices in these rooms. And then they get unleashed when they finally get to be out of the rooms. And here's these media. And I think a lot of them are in good spirits. I've been in great spirits just to actually interact with other people outside of just their team.
Kind of break up the boredom of the day.
Yes. I could only imagine, you know, just being stuck in there where it's just like, okay, think about losing weight and then maybe go down to the gym and then maybe work out a little bit and then repeat the process for the next 3 days or whatever.
Not fun.
So he came in with such a fun attitude, such a fun, just perspective, and I was blown away by his answers there at the end, but I still believe that he brushes his teeth with severe angry and bad intentions.
You know he does. He's lying unless he's high.
Then he's cool. He's like, I'm gonna get you plaque. I'm gonna get you. I might even floss now. I'm gonna floss you, motherfucker.
A little peek behind the scenes with Jeremy Stevens. I love it.
Yeah.
Listen, that should be a fun fight as well. I mean, you know, two guys that can finish fights, so we'll see how that plays out. Like I said, this card is not bad. There's some decent matchups on it. The rest of the main card, Dustin Stolzfus and Rodolfo Vieira. Of course, Rodolfo Vieira coming off the shocking submission loss where he admitted, you know, he was just exhausted and really said that he's got to focus on managing his energy. You know, he still gets nerves, and it's kind of uneasy for him to be in there. And, you know, he said basically, you know, I was like, was it kind of embarrassing? You know, you're this world champion jiu-jitsu player, and you get choked out. He's like, dude, I was so exhausted at that point. Like, literally anybody could have choked me out at that point. So, you know, he said that,
and I was like, bro, me and John couldn't choke you out.
Definitely could.
I was like, but I'm going to leave it alone.
Meanwhile, Dustin Stolzfus, who came up short in his debut as well, you know, said, and it was funny, man, because he's like, gosh, I hate saying this because it just sounds like I'm making excuses and I don't want to. He's like, but he's like, man, COVID messed me up. You know, I was still having some real long-term complications from COVID. And you know, that was not me in there. But, you know, I'm fully recovered now and I'm back. So, you know, a meaningful fight for both those guys and their styles could be a lot of fun. Gabriel Benitez and Billy Quarantillo kicks it off. That's going to be an absolute banger. I think a lot of people are thinking that one's you know, kind of fight of the night material to open up the main card. And the whole thing is on ESPN and ESPN Plus. You can catch it all either live or on demand. You got Daniel Rodriguez returning against the newcomer in Preston Parsons. Amanda Lemos versus Montserrat Ruiz. She's not. Actually, I think she goes by Montserrat Conejo now. I don't know if we have to change her name or not.
I thought they switched, which is what, Rabbit?
Yeah, which is Rabbit. Was. But I guess if that's Montserrat Rabbit, I guess if that's what she wants to go by, then we'll give it to her. We'll see what they call her on the broadcast. If they call her Conejo again, then I'll change your listing on MMA Junkie.
I wonder if she's going to come out with that little rabbit thing for weighing again. Remember that? She had that little
rabbit tail. The little rabbit tail. So that's what you got going. I knew you didn't. I knew you didn't. So that's what we got going on at the USC. I was going to get Nolan King this week. He's out in Uncasville, Connecticut again. We do have Bellator 262 on Friday night. I was going to get him on, and I'm going to do that more frequently when he's at Bellator events. But I'll be honest, the Bellator event isn't the greatest offering they've ever had either. Juliana Velasquez, the undefeated flyweight champ, puts her belt on the line against Denise Kielholz, who is a great striker, is still very early in her career, and I think is going to get – I like Denise Kielholz a lot, man. She's super nice and she's super fun to watch, but I just think this is an absolutely awful matchup. Stylistically, it's a terrible matchup. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you got a couple of prospects on there. Johnny Eblen, undefeated. I think you want to keep an eye on him. Cody Law, another up-and-coming fighter that I think people are talking a lot about. Cole Coffey, I know, will certainly be keeping an eye on Diana Afsaragova, the undefeated Russian import who has made quite the splash. But listen, I mean, we all know why they got her. We all know why they were marketing her. But she comes in and she gets a 29-second win in her promotional debut. So now you start thinking, wait a minute, do we got something here outside of just this, we all know why you signed her, Bellator. Don't even try to hide it. But,
She's gorgeous.
Maybe they got something. Maybe they got something.
Maybe.
So like I said, overall, not the biggest offerings on the weekend, but certainly, a couple events to keep you busy, and I think we'll have full coverage, of course, of the USC event. I think it's going to be one of those entertaining cards. Hopefully it moves quickly, gives us some highlights. It's not going to be the biggest traffic weekend for us at MMA Junkie, but you know what? Sometimes you need a little reset after a big event like we had this past weekend in USC 264. So now we're just kind of – settle back down and get into a calmer rhythm again after.
Yeah, and nights with fights is better than nights without. So I mean, to have two nights in a row where you can kind of chill, do your own thing, watch some good fights, hopefully, and then and not have to worry about missing some crazy action that everybody at the office is going to be talking about. This is one of those weekends where hopefully some good fights stand out and you have something good to talk about. But it's still a night with fights is better than a night without, so we're good for that. Friday, Saturday, boom, boom, boom.
We'll have you covered. Like I said, Nolan King out there. It's not the Fight Sphere anymore because I don't think they do the bubble anymore. It's just Uncasville, Connecticut. So he's out there.
Oh, so what do you call him, the mayor of now?
He was the mayor of the Fight Sphere, but the Fight Sphere doesn't exist anymore. So you got booted out of office, man. Sorry about that. You lost your title. Now we got to find something else for Nolan King. That was a temporary title, I guess. But he's out there covering that. Nolan obviously has done a great job of covering the Bellator beat because he just lives closest out of anybody. Yeah. So he's been the one that's been going to those events.
The Baron of Bellator. That's like royalty, right? Or that's a position, right? The Baron.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're working on something there. The Baron. And just wait and see how long it takes and be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Are you talking about? Why are you calling me the Baron?
So Nolan will be out there. Myself and Cole Coffey will be covering the USC event. By the way, shout out to everybody. Like I said, if you like what you're listening to, do us a favor. Rate us and review us. I haven't thrown that in there, but do that for us. If you feel sorry for us because we got kicked out of a bar, rate us and review us. We appreciate that feedback. And, of course, if you want to step your game up to the next level, head on over to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow, where for as little as $3 a month, you can sign up to help support the show and get exclusive access to all the and a half content, as well as just join the discussion over there. We got a fun little community. Want to give a shout-out to G. G had some kind words for us the other week, man. So appreciate everybody that reaches out over there. I'm not the best at getting back to everybody at social media sometimes because my inbox gets a little full sometimes. But over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow, you have my undivided attention. So G had some kind words for the show over there, and we really appreciate it.
I apologize to the rest of our Patreon people that I have not done the roadmap. I will get better. I will do that. I promise. I apologize.
Empty promises. And maybe we'll even debut this video thing. This has worked out pretty good. Like I said, we've been kind of finally tweaking this thing behind the scenes for a while. I think we got a setup that works now. So maybe we can go ahead and go full video at some point. And that way we can still keep doing the show, even if we're not together, because one half of the MMA Roadshow is old and burned out and needs to get some time at home.
That means I have to start taking showers again. So, damn it.
Oh, man. Plus. You stick with us long enough. I mean, listen, we've done this for 329 consecutive weeks. Never missed a show. I don't always plug our consistency the way I should, but I am proud of that. The Lou Gehrig of, well, I guess it, Cal Ripken ended up beating his number, right? So the Cal Ripken of MMA podcast every single week. You can count on us. But I guess if you stick with us long enough, I'm probably going to get old and burned out too. And it's just gonna, it's, we're going to have to rename the show to the MMA
home
not
show.
Yeah. MMA home show. We're
welcome
not getting out
to the
at all.
MMA home show. Go into your pantry, grab some snacks, and you'll be just like us.
a healthy salad, if you will. We were trying to cut down on the frosty beverages and shave off a few lbs.
Well, if we got to get our bad calories somewhere, might as well be in some hashtag frosty beverages.
God bless. I'm just saying. I don't think the hashtag frosty beverages is ever going away. Sorry. Just gonna be honest.
Sorry, not sorry.
All right, stick to them this weekend. Like I said, patreon.com/MMA Roadshow. We'll have the and a half. I'll bring that to you after the show. And in the meantime, thanks for listening.